wonder stars of the universe. My name is Ebony Freeman, and this is Curator's Corner, Part 2. First, you'll hear from Hope Saska. She's the head curator of collections and exhibitions at our wondrous University of Colorado at Boulder Art Museum in the College of Arts and Sciences. Well, welcome to Wonder Star Tuesday. Tell me, who are you?
So my name is Hope Saska.
Ooh, and where are we right now?
We are in the lobby of the CU Art Museum on the University of Colorado campus.
I love it. And how did you get your name?
My name was given to me by my parents. And when I was little, you know, I didn't really like it because it's kind of old-fashioned.
Aww.
But I see, you know, old-fashioned names are so
yes.
popular now that I've kind of grown to embrace it. So.
Oh, I love it. And then who introduced you to art? Because we didn't just end up in this museum on happenstance.
No, I think, you know, I grew up doing school field trips to museums and loving them. And when I was in fifth grade, I read this book called The Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Bosalie Frankweiler. Did you read that too?
Let's keep going.
Yes. And so I, at that point, just decided that that's like, if I could do that kind of adventuring and
yes.
researching and be surrounded by art objects as a job. And, you know, when I was in fifth grade, I sort of imagined I would live in a museum, which sometimes it feels like I do. And that's not always glamorous, but I loved that book, and it got me really interested in researching artwork and understanding the stories behind the makers and the materials.
Oh my goodness, I have been on this earth several decades, and I have never heard anyone say they also love that book. So that just, oh my goodness, I think I had the original copy,
yeah.
a new edition. I think if they had an audiobook, I'd probably listen to that too.
It was such a great book. And, you know, I've actually talked to other curators, and our collections manager also loves that book. So I think it is sort of like a starter step in getting people interested in museums. It was reading and like the power of imagining a life outside of the one that I was living and you know, just a lovely story about art.
Oh my goodness, I completely agree. I'm also wondering, you know, what kind of kid were you? Like, I'm so curious.
Mm-hmm. I would say that I was pretty introverted. I grew up in a small town, and so there was a lot of opportunity to just wander in the woods and be outside and be lost for hours. Mm. I have two younger sisters, and so we were sort of playmates, and I also really, really loved books, and so I had all of these avenues to kind of explore my imagination and just really kind of, you know, have that introspective perspective on life. And
that's phenomenal, the Hope Saska. Okay. And now my next question is, which piece of art from your past still brings a lot of emotion to mind every time you think of it?
Emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lot of artwork that does that, and so picking one is really hard because, you know, there are so many different emotions I can associate with artwork. I think one of my favorite pieces one story I can tell is a artwork that I at first didn't love, but have since like really grown to love is Frederick Church's Cotopaxi, which is a view of like an Ecuadorian paradise. Kind of a forest, mountain, rivers, all kinds of things. And it always felt really opaque to me. I didn't really understand what the artist was doing, or it felt overly complicated, and just I didn't really love it until I got the opportunity to work in the collection that housed it, and I would visit it regularly. And so I often think about that and sort of, you know, really taking the time to understand something that maybe I didn't. So I don't know what emotion that brings, other than I think like that sense of curiosity and finding curiosity like a reward from curiosity.
Oh, that is phenomenal. And then would you mind giving your best attempt at spelling that? Because I'd love to put it in the show notes.
Oh, sure. It's C-O-T-O-P-A-X-I.
Beautiful. Okay. And then, wait a second. Is that that brand that's on all the backpacks around town?
Maybe.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it refers to an actual place, so... Maybe.
You are full of knowledge. I have one of those backpacks. And, you know, I've heard there's a story behind it, but I didn't look into the story. So thank you for telling me the story. Oh, my goodness. And then you've actually already answered the next question. Uh-huh. I feel like you had a peek at these questions, sneaky lady. Did you ever consider switching gears? And if so, why did you stay along the art and art museum curation path?
I did. I considered it several times. I think I have an underlying stubbornness in me and a sense of, like, clarity when I come to a decision. But I think when I was in graduate school, I sort of had these fantasies of, you know, becoming, like, going to work for a cooking magazine or something. Ooh. Like, that was always my escape. And like, you know, when I was working on a paper, having people over and cooking for them was always like the pleasure, and so like a creative outlet. And so for a while, I think I thought, you know, I could just, like, who cares about a dissertation? Let's just get a career in cooking, which is, you know, an incredibly challenging. No one just switches into that kind of that field, and so I think I toyed with that a little bit. And I have, you know, coming to this position and in other curatorial positions, I did always have one foot in the academy, so doing a lot of teaching in addition to curating. And I think it's just the way I really loved to work with objects that sort of won out over developing a course and teaching a syllabus and going into that track of producing scholarship through, you know, research and travel. I just loved working with objects and thinking about presenting arguments and telling stories through exhibitions was always more important. So, I think going into, like, becoming a professor or a lecturer at an institution was always available as an option. But I went into graduate school knowing that I wanted to work in museums, thought about doing something different, and ultimately really landed in museum work as the right place for me.
Oh my gosh, even the way you tell that story, I'm so convinced. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see it. It's a movie in my eyes right now. Yeah. Perfection. And then, you know, you kind of just answered the next question. I have to tilt my notebook now.
Yes,
because
I'll look at the ceiling. How's
that? My next question, I feel like you've answered about a bit of it, but if you have anything else to add around what does it actually mean to be a curator? So we have a lot of artists listening to this season's podcast series, so they might be interested in it. They might want to know how to talk to you. I mean, you're very easy to talk to, but what do you do?
Oh gosh, a little bit of everything. And I appreciate this question a lot, because I think everyone you ask who has a title of being a curator is going to have a really different answer. And we're all kind of, you know, doing somewhat the same things, but we all have a different sense of what the job might be. And that also depends on the institution. Because here as a curator, I care for a collection in the sense that I'm responsible for researching it and thinking really hard about what are the works that I might want to collect. So we're kind of have one foot in the past, where we're thinking about the collection and how it was constructed and how it was built and what the objects might mean, and then a foot in the future, thinking about what will we do to change the collection so that it's a viable and exciting collection for people 100 years from now. So there's a little bit of that. I think the exhibition making side of curation for me is trying to find, I really like working collaboratively. So I think it's sort of trying to find a question that I don't necessarily know the answer to, and finding some other people that are also thinking around that same question. So right now I just opened a show called The Art That Made Medicine, and I collaborated with an English professor whose name is Tora Brilo, And we sort of came together with this question about, like, well, what would this, how do we tell a story about the way that maybe scientists and anatomists and artists came together to sort of shape the medical discipline? And then how did artists participate in that creation? And so it was sort of this idea that we know a lot of people have been thinking about, but we wanted to take objects and think through this question together and create a narrative. And I think we're happy with the narrative that we created. We do see a lot of things that we wish we could do better, or, you know, other avenues. And we know that, you know, it's a multifaceted thing. If we were doing the show 5 years from now, it would look totally different. And if we had done it 5 years previously, it would also look different. So there's always sort of the sense of telling a story or asking a question at any particular point of time, and thinking through your answer, or kind of like presenting your question and your process of answering through artwork.
Oh my goodness, that is the most poetic response. Oh my, I'm so happy we're recording this. You know, and I love your comment about collaboration. I am mm-hmm. thrilled that we actually met through the mm-hmm. CU Art Museum Collection Committee. Mm-hmm. I'm one of your newest members, and I am thrilled about it. How does a curator, when I first saw it, uh-huh. my initial thought was, oh my gosh, they can't be serious, this is awesome. Then I applied, and mm-hmm. I got accepted. I was like, oh my gosh, you can't mm-hmm. be serious, this is so awesome. But I couldn't help but have it in the back of my head. How does a curator have the sense of being, a sense of self, to be able to accept collaboration when it comes to museum curation mm-hmm. and collection? And I know a piece of my work is going to be helping de-access, so
yes.
Taking pieces out of the mm-hmm. larger repertoire. And that must be scary if you took, you know, hours of your life pulling this in, I'm going to help take it out. How uh-huh. do you allow that to happen? And how are you so open to collaboration in that mm-hmm. area?
I think collaboration, like, is difficult. True collaboration is really difficult. And so museums have had collection committees for ages. And I think, like, the call that you answered was placed by our director, who is really thinking about how to bring more people from out of campus and even on campus people who maybe weren't immediately connected to the museum or connected to the art department on campus or in some art-making realm. And so there was a desire to open it up. But I think when it comes to collaboration that you're talking about, it's hard and it's ongoing, like an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. It's challenging. It's sort of sharing authority and realizing that sometimes the best role is not to direct, but to let things unfold and mm-hmm. let other people take bring their authority forward. It can be really tough, and mm-hmm. I struggle with it. I think most people do in this position, because as especially those of us who have come through like years and years of graduate school, there's always praise and reward for being the one in the classroom who knows mm-hmm. the most, and that changes when you assume mm-hmm. a true collaborative spirit.
Ooh. Do you have any advice for new curators who are just having their first collection committee stand on and they're already like, oh my gosh, these are fools, I can't believe or they're like, oh my gosh, they're genius and I don't know how I'm going to have conversation with them. How do you have that back and forth, and how do you keep that mentality? Are there any books or articles or exercises that you like to do?
I think it's experience. So talking to people who have experience, or if you're a new curator, you've possibly, hopefully, had some sorts of kind of entry-level positions that have provided you experience. I also would say reaching out to a network and cultivating a network mm-hmm. is really important, so that you have people that you can rely on. And then ultimately, you just have to trust yourself mm-hmm. and really trust that, you know, if you're coming to like a collection committee and you have an artwork that you think belongs in the collection, that you know, trust that you have done your work and you've done your research and you feel really comfortable and you can really imagine the role that this artwork, whatever it is going to play, you know, 50 or 100 years in the future. Like really making sure it fits with the mission of the museum, the other aspects of the collection. And if you've done that work and you can really justify it and you can trust yourself, that'll help it go smoothly.
Oh, I love it. All you future curators, you've got all the advice you need now. Take a deep breath. Okay. And you know, you're making me think of more questions. I'm so sorry. This always happens. Yeah. If anyone interesting, I'm like, oh my gosh, another one. So, you know, you mentioned trusting yourself, mm-hmm. which is a powerful two words. It's mm-hmm. trusting yourself. But with all your years of experience, with all your years of education, however, as art continues to move forward, how do you run up against any tension between, okay, you know, NFTs are a little hot right now. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't fall in line with your practice or your preferences, how do you accept new forms of art or new art theories into your greater database of knowledge and into the museum potentially, mm-hmm. while still staying true to yourself and your mission and your core?
I think with that, then your personal networks and professional networks can be enormously helpful. My area of expertise was 18th century England, so England in the 1700s, and I work have a much greater range of materials in the collection that I'm responsible for. So I think, you know, part of it is the network, and I rely on colleagues a lot. I can ask questions about artists or productions that I'm interested in. But then I had this great advisor when I was in grad school who said the 18th century isn't over yet. And what he was saying is that some of the questions that maybe are historical, especially, you know, 18th century is this great age of colonialism, and we're still living those impacts. So to think that anything is brand new is kind of inaccurate, because there's a continuum that we're participating in. So it's really about figuring out where, you know, a certain artist might be on the continuum. And a lot of the times, contemporary artists are working through very similar questions to artists who were living 300 years ago. So it's kind of figuring out where something falls into the conversation. So if you can always kind of figure out where that, it's like walking into a cocktail party or a party and picking up a line that continues from conversant to conversant. If you can plug into that, then you can work in any era, I think.
Oh my goodness. That I have so many thoughts about that. One is, as a Black woman in 21st century, I sure hope the 18th century is over. Please let it be over.
I know, but unfortunately, we are sort of living through the effects. And in a lot of ways, those impacts of, enslaving people, or, you know, as a foundational moment in American history, or that kind of colonial trade era is still, in the capitalist society that it kind of created, is still very much part of the history that we are living with. So, you know, it's not, the century didn't end and things turned over and start fresh. We're still kind of part of that historical continuum.
Oh, that is so true. Oh my gosh, you're making me think so much deeper. Oh, goodness gracious. Let's go back to this. I'm kidding. But, you know, another thing I was wondering about here, it slipped by me. I got too interested in your words. Let's go ahead. And, you know, I was wondering on that note about rolling back a little bit, and on that note about collaboration, mm-hmm. are there any drawbacks to too many cooks in the kitchen? And when, for example, with mm-hmm. guest curators and yes. that experience, or co-curators, mm-hmm. how does that work? How does that develop into something that is so transformative mm-hmm. for citizens and for exhibit attendees?
Yes. I think the too many cooks in the kitchen situation is a real challenge. And the way that I approach it, and I this is an area that I want to explore more. I'm still developing ways of working with larger groups. But I think that there's something to kind of making sure that as a curator, you are kind of like a project manager or director. So you have your eyes on a lot of different aspects of the project. And when you work with a group of people, it's really important to be very clear about what you're asking each group to provide input on. So it's not just an open door and everybody can walk in at the same time, but that people feel comfortable and supported knowing that their expertise in a particular area is wanted and that they can really have an impact rather than being one of many voices.
Okay, now I feel like I'm in very good hands. Okay, and now we're down to our penultimate question. So what kind of person should apply to work in and around museums? Mm-hmm. And what kind of person thrives in this type of space?
Oh, I think a lot of different types of people thrive. And there's because there are so many roles in museums. And I think more and more museums are becoming, hopefully, and I think this is an ongoing issue, and there are a lot of groups that are really kind of speaking truth to power and sort of questioning hierarchies within museums. But there's a lot of collaboration and cross work in museum departments. So I think if you tend to like work that involves like visual arts and material, and really understanding material, that's something that you will work with across different collections. Curiosity, I think there's a certain sort of flexibility of thinking you have to bring to it, and flexibility of time. And, you know, it's not a particularly well-paid position either. So in general, museums don't tend to really have high salaries. So I wouldn't recommend, you know, like that's not a main goal for somebody. So to go in with that awareness, and it's a very, they tend to be very competitive positions as well. But I think curiosity and a real interest in collaborating and kind of working with objects and artworks.
Oh my goodness, I love it, I love it. Okay, we're down to the last question. I want you to choose a number between 1 and 6.
5.
Ooh, okay, what'd she get, y'all? So your Wonderstar prompt is, who is your farthest Wonderstar? And so Wonderstars of the Universe overall is about the people who make us up and who influence us and who make us who we are. So I want you to tell me who is the furthest person you can think of, whether that's emotionally, spiritually, physically, geologically.
Furthest. Gosh, I don't know. I think I'm a transplant in Colorado. I came from the East Coast. So, you know, my family, I'm very connected, you know, miss them terribly. And so they are my kind of guiding stars in there, but they're far away.
Yeah.
So that's geographic. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, we have these sort of time periods that we connect with. And so I often, you know, have these sort of historical, whether they're famous curators that I think about how they might have built certain collections, and I'm really curious about historical processes of curation or collection building. So there's some historical figures that I also really think about. You know, like there was a famous print collector named Jean-Paul Mariette, who a lot of museum curators who are interested particularly in works on paper, which is prints and drawings, sort of think about his process. And you know, it's just sort of a touchstone when you think about the history of valuing and keeping certain kinds of objects.
Oh my gosh, deepest answer. Oh my goodness. Okay, this is awesome. Might have to interview again in like a year or two. You are too good. Thank you so much for joining
me,
Wonderstar Tuesday, Curator's Corner.
And
where can people find you if they did want to look you up, if they ever wanted to contact you? Do you have Instagram, website?
So I'm pretty, this is where my age shows, and I'm pretty old school. I am, the easiest way to find me is on the CU Art Museum's website through the staff listings. And I have a little bio there and a link to my email.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, go find her, y'all. Goodbye. What? And now you'll hear from Adrian Amato, co-founder and director of the Boulder Creative Collective on Pearl Street. Welcome to Wonderstar Friday. What's your name?
My name is Adrian Amato.
Ooh, how'd you get that last name?
From my grandpa, I guess.
Aww.
No, I'm Italian, so.
Ooh.
Yep.
What part of Italy?
My grandmother is from Sicily, and my grandfather is from Naples.
Ah.
And I have three sisters, so my dad made it very clear and important that even if we got married, we weren't allowed to change our last names.
Nice.
Because there were four of us, and we were all girls, so. Currently, none of us are married, and nobody has changed their name. So
excellent.
I think he maybe got his wish.
Oh, I love it! I love it for him.
Yeah.
How'd you end up in Boulder?
How did I end up here? I actually came here with my ex-partner. He was doing his PhD at CU, and secretly, I was living on the East Coast, and I hated where I lived. I lived in Boston. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't me. And I actually did my undergrad in Denver. So when we were looking to move for his PhD, Boulder was one of the opportunities that came up, and I was really happy to come back to the Southwest and come back to Colorado because I've always felt really at home here.
I love that.
Yeah.
What do you do here?
I run a nonprofit arts organization. I am a trained artist and hoping that I get to actually paint again, but really running a business is a lot of work. So what I decided recently is that my medium, instead of paint right now, is actually creating opportunities. So I'm still creating something.
Yes.
So when I feel like a little bit down that I'm not making physical objects, there's a lot of those in the world. There's kind of enough of those in the world. So I feel like I am still creating something, but it's just using space, opportunity, connecting people, things like that.
And what's the name of your business? Where can they find you? And how did you start doing that?
It's called the Boulder Creative Collective.
Excellent.
And the idea started on a hike, actually, with my...
Perfect. Okay.
My business partner, who's also my best friend. We were talking, we had both just moved here, and we felt like there was something sort of missing in the creative community. So we started doing pop-ups. So we borrowed spaces in the beginning and brought in artists and curated a whole show, and it was a one-night thing.
Oh, wow.
Created these really fun, they were events, really.
How did you have the gumption to actually do that? Because it's very easy to say I'm going to do a pop-up, and it's very hard to actually do a pop-up.
I think that's what a lot of people don't know is, like, the build-up and the process, it's like so much for one night. And then it's really funny because then, like, the teardown after, it's like 20 minutes and you're done. And it took you, like, 6 months to plan something. It's just a lot of planning and, like, crossing off the list. And sometimes the list is huge and then you just slowly make your way through it.
And how do you have the skills to be able to do that?
That's a good question. I think you just have to want to do it. I don't know that it's a trainable skill necessarily. I don't even know if it's being an organized person. I think secretly on the inside I'm a mess, and on the outside I look organized.
Well, your outfit is great. Your outfit is like this neutral tones. We got the nice greens and pale brown.
I'm into the neutral tones right now. Yeah. But I think about it in the shower because I'm like, I'm going to step out of here in a second and have to go into the closet and like pick out the clothes. So let me try to put it together in my mind.
Oh,
first.
I love that.
How do I feel today? What do I want to look like?
Ooh.
So I think it can somehow be translated to creating something like an event. It's like, how do I feel? What do I want to convey? And then, like, kind of trying to put together the pieces,
And a big part of your work is a residency. How do you find your residence? How do you choose your residence?
For the first year, it was kind of more word of mouth, but we did put the call out there to a lot of our contacts and connections around Boulder and Denver and sort of the Front Range area.
Ah.
So some we knew, some were brand new to us. The second residency, which is really how it will work moving forward, because the first year was a pilot, so now the second year, now we're sort of into more of an established program.
Yeah.
It will be application-based, and they're juried in, and I think the interesting part of our jury is each outgoing residency, they're the jury.
Excellent.
So then it's always going to be a different round, and we'll bring in both myself and my partner. We're part of the process, but it's like based on a rubric. Everyone is scored on various elements of their application, how well they apply to a theme, their portfolio, etc., things like that. So it's really open how it comes together. You know, it's not based on favoritism or anything like that. I think it is really fair because they're juried in by their peers, basically other working artists and creatives. So,
and how does one curate? Because I just I think about even here at the Noble Art District, our bus stop gallery sponsored by Streetwise Arts, we're all very vastly different, and yet we blend so well together. And I've heard so many people comment on, oh my gosh, I love that I'm able to see so many types of arts, but I get that same feeling of people really caring about the Boulder community. How do you bring that when you're seeing such diverse and different art pieces submitted for your residencies?
Well, one, I think everyone's a curator, really.
Oh.
Everybody is creative. Mm. I mean, I think we see so many different, like, books and podcasts and workshops and things like that. Like, right, everyone can be an artist. Everyone can be creative. It's just, like, tapping into your own process and learning how to kind of push yourself in those directions. I think it's a funny thing that happens, what you just said, though. Those natural connections that we find. I mean, I do think right now in art there is so much more importance about the difference of, like, the socio-political themes and things that artists are working with. You know, you yourself, you have such a different medium. In our first residency, we had two writer, performer, poets, you know, so we're also not just looking at just the visual arts, we want performing arts.
Oh,
and I think having those mediums cross between, like, installation, you know, whether it's like painting, photography, sculpture, and then having the other layers of liberal arts in there as well, I think makes it really dynamic and interesting, and then you see all those connections kind of come out more naturally. And I also think it's like camp, right? You're kind of in, like, grown-up camp here.
It really is.
Or like the real world or something like that, where it's like you're put in this situation for X amount of time, and I think those natural connections just happen when you get to, like, work in that type of environment. And I think that's why they're also so important to have, because of what comes out, because of the connections that are made, because of the collaborations that can happen within work, the ideals that people find that they share, you know. So I think there's just I think a lot of it is just natural human connection that we all want.
I love that. Okay, we're down to our last two questions.
Okay,
so what the penultimate is, what's your favorite story of a time that a curator, a guest, an artist had a really phenomenal or impactful experience at the Boulder Creative Collective? Or a board member, anyone in that community?
Let me think, because there's a lot of them, right?
Love to hear it.
We had a show that was a group show. I don't know why this just popped into my head, but this was before we did the residency. So it was open to all of the artists that we had worked with, and it was a sort of kind of like generic theme, like overarching, like, idea for them to all work with, and it was like somewhat kind of like a commentary on, like, the political climate that we were in. I want to say this was probably like 2018. And I'd have to think there was maybe 10, 15 artists. There was maybe more than that. But what they each came back with for this group show, and again, it was like kind of what you just said, it was like all of a sudden you see these, like, connecting themes, and we had such a, like, varied outcome of what each artist produced, and it made for, like, a really interesting group show. I mean, there was this sound artist that there were four musicians, and they were set up in different parts of the gallery, and they each had on headphones, and they were playing so you could hear, but they couldn't hear each other. And the interesting thing about, like, it was a very vibey event. There was a lot of people. It was a, like, nice night in Colorado. You know, it used to be out in this, like, funky area in East Boulder. You'd think it would be, like, a chaotic mess of sound, and it somehow was, like, really connected still and worked. And it was visually really interesting, and mm-hmm. it interacted with like both the viewers and the other art really well. It was a neat show, and I like experiencing things like that. Like, you don't know what's going to happen until it's happening. That was a fun event, I think.
Okay, mini bonus question. Where can we hear about those kind of events? Sounds awesome. I want to go like last year, it sounds like.
Right. I mean, one, you can come to our space and follow us. We're always trying to bring, I think, experiences like those into Boulder specifically, because like I love to go look, everywhere I go and look at art. And Boulder doesn't have as many spaces with really current contemporary working mm-hmm. artists working in like those types of mediums, like much like yourself, that are not just Southwestern landscape paintings. No, not to dog on them, because those are beautiful too.
They're gorgeous.
But work that is more experiential. Sure, we can go to Denver, but with Boulder being, I mean, you worked at Google. You think with the affluent town that we live in, and people, so many people coming from the Bay Area and other areas, that I feel like they'd want it too because they've experienced it elsewhere. And we really want to bring that here.
Oh, I love it, love it, love it. Okay, final question. You can choose from the blue, which is more chilled and child-friendly, or the orange, which is spicy and adult-friendly.
Oh, I want spice.
Oh, okay. Wonderstar prompt. What'd you get?
Your closest wonder star.
Oh, I love it. Okay, tell me a mini story about the person who you first thought of when you thought about the person who is closest as your wonder star.
I actually immediately thought of my best friend / business partner who couldn't be here today. You know.
What's her name?
Her name is Kelly Koprusek. We miss you here today, Kelly. She had a little situation in life to deal with today, as life often does, throws a wrench in your plans. But, you know, they say you shouldn't go into business with friends, and that can very much be true in a lot of instances, but not in our case. You know, working with someone that really actually gets you, even when you don't get yourself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Knows when you're happy, knows when you're struggling, you know, lets you be right when they know you want to be right, you know. Also, vice versa, like, we know how to, like, pick and choose our battles with each other, and, you know, 99% of the time we're on the same page, and the, you know, point whatever percentage that we're not, we just, like, agree to disagree and move on, and there's never any, you know, ill will or hard feelings between us, but we always have the same overall, like, moral compass, goals in mind, working together. We have children of the same age, you know, like our lives are like really intertwined.
Yeah.
And it could be really challenging, but it's really nice having someone who is, you know, your friend, your sister, your, you know, all of your business partner, always has your back, you know. So that would be my closest wonder star.
Oh my goodness, that was perfect. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much for coming to Wonder Star Friday.
Thank you, I love this.
Thank y'all for joining me in part 2 of Curator's Corner. Now jump right into part 2 of Pop to the Bus Stop. See you soon.